This is a petition for further review. And is it Mr.?
Mr. Mulliner, Tim Mulliner.
Okay, Mr. Mulliner, good morning to you.
Good morning, may I approach?
You may.
Good morning, all members of the court. If it pleases the court, my name is Tim Mulliner of the firm Abrahams, Castle, and Kassman. My name is a new one to other items in the record you may have seen. Kevin O'Keefe was the individual who filed this appeal and is the signatory to the underlying pleadings and motions. I have since taken over, so that's why I'm arguing today. Also at counsel's table is Rob Shard's partner with the same firm. It's, in my opinion, kind of a strange posture to be here today because there's essentially no record on appeal because we were dismissed by the Court of Appeals before the transcript or bill of exceptions could be deposited. For that reason, and because I think the issues are pretty straightforward, I'm not planning to take a lot of time this morning. I would ask that we reserve 4 minutes if possible for rebuttal. The salient facts and dates here are fairly straightforward. The underlying case, it does involve the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act and whether service was properly made. I won't get into the dispute there because that's the real meat of the case, which is not on appeal. The issue here is we, Metro, filed for motion for summary judgment on those issues regarding service under the PSTCA. The court denied that motion on August 23rd of last year. On September 1st of last year, a change to Statute 25-1902, which defines final orders, was effective. It says that a motion for summary judgment on behalf of a political subdivision such as Metro, asserting sovereign immunity, which we were in our motion, is a final order.
Is that change a procedural or substantive change?
I believe it's procedural. And I can tell you why. The jurisdiction of this court is defined elsewhere. 25-1911, captioned jurisdiction, appellate jurisdiction, tells us that final orders, decrees, and judgments are the jurisdiction of this court. This court has the authority to vacate, modify, or remand. The very next statute, 25-1912, then is the procedural component of that. It talks about how that jurisdiction is conferred, when and how, specifically in notice of appeal. 1902, the changes were made to, there was subdivision D, which says a final order is now this thing I've described, the motion for summary judgment, and a subdivision E, which is clearly procedural. It says that appeal can be taken from such an order denying an MSJ within 30 days of that order being entered or within 30 days of judgment being entered. So for those reasons, I think it was procedural rather than jurisdictional. None of these things change the jurisdiction of this court.
What have we said about procedural changes and how they apply to pending cases?
I think it's a non-issue here because the relevant dates all occurred after the effective date of the statute. An opposition to the petition was filed. We filed a motion to strike last week. It's our position that was untimely filed. It raised issues that were never raised before, and we don't have the opportunity to reply. But because Your Honor is asking the question, I'll address it. That raised case law which says statutes that aren't expressly made retroactive are not retroactive. That isn't an issue here. September 1st, we all agree this statute was effective. Okay, we filed our notice of appeal, which is how jurisdiction is conferred after that date, September 12th.
So you're using the key date as the date you filed your notice of appeal? Not the date the original order was entered.
Of those two, that's certainly true, I believe. So,
and you believe that fact is dispositive in this matter? I'm going to follow up with the next question. I'm going to assume that you're going to answer yes. And do you have any case law to support that?
I do not. I would point to statute, specifically 25-1912, and case law interpreting it. But specifically within that statute, it says nothing other than the notice of appeal shall be determined to be jurisdictional. Here, jurisdiction then is determined, I believe, upon the filing of notice of appeal. Now, there is no Nebraska case law that I'm aware of that is on all fours with this. I would liken it, though, to removal to federal court. Whether federal court looks to its jurisdiction, that is determined on the date the removal was filed. Here, I don't think we need to jump that analogy. Excuse me, I think it's helpful. But here, the notice of appeal, the procedure by which jurisdiction is conferred, is laid out by statute. So I do think that's dispositive.
I think maybe another way to say that is that the change took place while the case was still pending at the trial level. Is that right?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The change to 1902 took place while the case was still pending at the trial level.
That's
right. Is that a correct statement of facts?
That is right. And we would agree that it isn't retroactively applied in that if everything that I've described to you happened a month earlier, if our notice of appeal was filed in August, for example, and we were standing before you today, well, Your Honor, September 1st, that all changed, that would be retroactive application. That we're not arguing because that's not an issue. Also, in the response brief, there was a secondary argument made. So I do believe it's dispositive because it's in our favor that the notice of appeal is dispositive, is the relevant date. However, they've made the alternative argument that our motion for reconsideration, which they dub a motion for rehearing, does not essentially double the time or start the stopwatch again for our time for appeal. That, I think, kind of misses the point, but again, this is really a motion for to alter or amend the judgment. Case law, again, here is clear, and again, the statute 19-12 tells us that when you file a motion, however it's titled, here it was a motion for reconsideration, if it's filed within 10 days and seeks to alter, amend, or modify, it should be treated as a motion to amend or modify, which does terminate the original 30-day clock and does start anew. So to the extent we even get to that secondary argument, I think it fails and works against the appellees for that reason. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hams, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Chief Justice. It pleases this court, counsel, good morning. My name is Matt Hamis, and I have the privilege of representing Great Northern Insurance Company in the matter before the court today. It's our position that the controlling legal issue before the court is the applicability of a portion of Nebraska Revised Statute 25-1902 that was amended, specifically subparagraph 1D, that went into effect after the date that the order denying summary judgment was entered by the District Court of Douglas County.
Where was the case on September 1?
Where
pending,
was
it pending in the trial court?
It was pending in trial court, Your Honor, yes. The order for summary judgment had been denied, and it was just pending. We were in the midst of discovery. And so
the amendment to 1902, was that a substantive or procedural amendment?
Yeah, I read it as a substantive. I think it's a jurisdictional change that this court has said that a party may only appeal a final appealable order, a final order that is appealable, and the order that they are seeking an appeal on was not a final appealable order at the time it was entered.
What about that makes it substantive?
Well, I think it confers jurisdiction on this court. This court does not have jurisdiction to hear the appeal, and that was the reason that we think the Court of Appeals correctly decided that the order that they were seeking an appeal on is not an appealable final order.
What's your understanding of the difference between substantive and procedural changes to legislation?
My understanding is that the procedural change would deal more with the timing. I'm interpreting your question as to substantive as if it were to confer the jurisdiction to this court. And so I'm looking at that as that they are conferring in subparagraph 1D. They're now making orders denying motions for summary judgment involving the issue of sovereign immunity. They're making them appealable. And then there's actually another subparagraph 2 that was added that allows discretion to the political subdivision. When do they want to file
their
appeal?
Isn't this a timing thing?
It is a timing thing. And it's really
just... It's not. It would not be a new proposition that an appellate court could look at the treatment of summary judgments below.
I would agree. But I would submit, and we think that that's the sole issue here, is just... I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
I was apologizing to Justice Stacy for cutting her off.
Nope. Okay. We think this is a 100%. I mean, the reason why we're here, I would agree with counsel that the posture of this case and why we're standing in front of you, there's a limited record. We think it all boils down to there's an effective date for a particular statute. It was and is September 1st, 2019. The statute that they rely upon to determine this order is a final appealable order. It was passed by the unicameral on May 13th, 2019. It was approved by the governor on May 19th, 2019. The Nebraska Constitution, Section 3, Article 27, says that no act shall take effect until 3 calendar months after the adjournment of the session at which it is passed, unless in case of an emergency. And so the unicameral ended its session. This law did not become effective until September 1st.
Having trouble with your analysis of substantive versus procedural. Isn't substantive, doesn't that go to the merits of your subrogation claim? Isn't procedural how that subrogation claim is vindicated?
I would agree with how you've characterized that, but I guess I'm just looking at it. I don't think that that issue I would submit is not determinative of the question that's presented to the court today. I think it's just a matter of application of when are statutes effective. This court has said legislative acts are prospective in nature. They're not retroactive unless there's something clearly in the act that says it's retroactive.
Isn't that a rule that applies to substantive changes to the law, not procedural changes?
I don't read it that way, Your Honor.
Counsel,
so I would say no.
Counsel, is it possible for us, as we look at the amendments to 25-1902, is it possible to construe those both as procedural and substantive, depending on what you look at? What are we to make of the fact that there are now two potential appeal dates, either when the order is entered or after the entry of judgment? Is that substantive or procedural?
I think you can look at it both ways. I look at it, if it confers jurisdiction, that's how I'm interpreting it as substantive. But I haven't looked at that issue in terms of today's appeal. I don't believe from the way that what the appellant had filed as their error of the Court of Appeals, just simply that the Court of Appeals failed to recognize that the order that had been determined, it was an order denying summary judgment, before the effective date of 25-1902, the amendment was entered on September 1st, 2019. Before that time, this would not be an appealable order. It was not a final appealable order.
But that doesn't mean it couldn't be reviewed. It's just, again, as Judge Miller-Lerman was saying earlier, an issue of timing.
Exactly.
So it moved it up. But what do we make of the fact that it both moved up the right to appeal, the timing of the right to appeal, and left it at the final judgment as well? Is that substantive or procedural?
I see it could be both, depending on how you view it, but that the answer to that question I don't believe is determinative. I think it's this change on whether it's appealable at the time the order's entered and at the time that or they can appeal it after a judgment is entered, that all came into effect. It only became effective after September 1st, 2019. Anything that happened before that does not apply to the amended statute, and that's the position that we're taking, and that's why we believe the Court of Appeals was correct in determining that the appellate courts lack jurisdiction, and so they dismiss the appeal. We think that's the right decision, that the Court of Appeals was applying a Nebraska law correctly, and we're just asking this court to affirm that decision, maybe take the opportunity, because there is there are several dates that apply here. You've got the order, the date of entry is August 23rd, 2019. You have the effective date of the statute, September 1st, and then you have their filing of the notice of appeal on September 19th, 2019. So I see this case more as an opportunity for this court to give some guidance to the rest of the attorneys in this state, just how we apply statutes, when they go into effect, what their meaning of that is. But as we read Nebraska law, we think that that statute, it only went into effect on September 1st. Any orders entered after that time, if this same order were entered after September 1st, I would agree then that that would fall, that type of an order denying summary judgment based on a grant of sovereign immunity, that would then become a final appealable order under the statute. And at that point, then, the appellant could use its discretion. It could decide we want to appeal that right now, or let's go through the case, let's see if we win, all the other things. If there's any other appealable issues that are identified, they can then wait until an order of judgment is entered and then appeal the court's determination.
Let's set aside the procedural versus substantive argument for a second.
Thank you.
And say that this, make the hypothetical that we're finding that this is substantive. Do you have any case law that you could point us to that the August 23rd date would be the date that we should be looking at as opposed to the date of appeal?
We have referenced some cases, Your Honor, that look at orders, and in the case of in re guardianship of Forster, they talk about when the order was entered, and then there was a statute that became effective afterwards, and they said that statute, the amended statute, did not apply to the order that had previously been entered. And so what we've put in our brief, which we think is just the determinative issue here, is just that very point, that this court looks at that order and applies the law of Nebraska that was in effect on the date that order was entered, August 23rd, 2019.
The law of substance or a law of procedure in guardianship case?
In the guardianship of Forster?
Yeah.
I don't know if it made a determination in that case, Your Honor, so I wouldn't be prepared to tell you that.
Thank you.
Unless there's any other questions, I'll sit down. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 3 minutes and 17 seconds.
3 minutes and 17 seconds, Mr. Mulliner.
I will do my best not to take that unless the court has questions. With due respect to Mr. Hamus, I want to point out that while guidance would be helpful for other cases under other facts, what we're looking at is the facts here and the relevant dates here just don't create the ambiguity that appellees seem to imply. If we look at the relevant statutes that I've mentioned, 1911, so 25-1911, 25-1912, if we read those on their face as they exist today, none of it needs to be amended. None of it needs to say this applies prior, this applies retroactively. For example, the jurisdiction of the court, final orders, judgments, or decrees this court has jurisdiction of. It doesn't say entered prior to or at the time of their entry were deemed final orders. And that's important because to Your Honor's question, somewhat, I guess, by analogy, there are orders that are not appealable at the time but do become so. So, for example, an interlocutory order where not all issues are decided at the time of its entry can't be appealed then, but those issues are still appealable at the conclusion of the case or when all issues are resolved. Here, so the problem with that appellee's argument there is they want to view this in a vacuum. It was entered prior to September 1st, so it never can be considered a final order under this new statute.
At the time it was entered, there's no question it was not a final order under the definition that then existed.
I agree wholeheartedly.
All right.
But I don't think we view that in a vacuum for many reasons. There are, by my example, many interlocutory orders that at the time of their entry are not appealable, but things happen later. Whether it's in the case or other issues are decided, other issues or defendants are dismissed, things that weren't appealable, orders that weren't final, become final. Ours wasn't on August 23rd when it was entered. On September 1st, it was. We look at that statute, the changes to that statute 1902. It says our order, as of September 1st, is a final order, appealable. It says within 30 days of its entry, you can appeal. Here, we're fortunate to be able to satisfy that timing requirement. So nothing needs to be changed. We need to read nothing more into the statute than what it already says, both those in 1911 and 1912. I do need to mention Ochsner quickly. That was raised in the response brief. I think that is entirely an apposite here. For example, it involved the repeal of a statute, and the court in that case specifically relied on a Nebraska statute that says a repeal does not apply to pending cases. Repeal of a statute does not apply to then pending cases. I won't recite the holding in that case, but it's clear, I think, from its 2 or 3 page opinion that it just doesn't apply here. Unless there are any other questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. Court is adjourned and you are excused.